Good evening, Browns fans, and welcome to the Gang of Three. As promised, there are three of us. Pete Smith is here. How you doing, Pete?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Lane, how you doing, sir? Lane, you there? He's there. He's unmuted, so he will be reappearing soon, I'm sure. So, Pete, what do you want to talk about tonight? You want to talk quarterbacks? Everybody loves talking quarterbacks, right? Let's try and talk about it from a little bit different perspective tonight than the sort of the celebrity game that's being played right now. Okay. Oh, we lost Lane. He'll come back. And if you are watching this wonderful television program, our live streaming program, please feel free to like and subscribe the broadcast. Subscribe to the broadcast, especially on YouTube. The YouTube channel will become an important way to hear about breaking news around the OBR as we have an eventful summer and fall plan. So make sure that you are subscribed so you are informed whenever we are on the air. And also feel free to comment in the chat rooms, whether you're on Twitch or Facebook or YouTube, comment, and we will get your questions and we will work as many of those in as we possibly can. Welcome back, Lane. You there, sir?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. I can hear you now. So you are fully involved. So, let's start off with what has been dominating the news headlines for the last couple of days. And that is a lot of quarterback gossip, you know, created a little bit by Deion Sanders going on a podcast, created a little bit by media sort of saying this person's being favored, this person is likely behind, whatever. I'd like to talk about it from a little bit of a different perspective tonight, if that's okay with you guys. And that is taking a look at Todd Monken's offense and the quarterbacks that we have on hand and trying to figure out, and the schedule coming up, and trying to figure out what makes sense for the Cleveland Browns. I would like to start with you, Pete. If you were going to describe Todd Monken's offense or his desired offense, what would be some bullet points? Would it be pre-snap movement? Would it be hitting between the yard markers, throwing between the yard markers? What sort of bullet points would you assign to Todd Monken's offense?
Right now, I would say it's amorphous in the way he wants to move everybody around. I mean, between what they already had, which includes Jerry Jeudy and Harold Fannin, and what they've added in Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston and players like Dylan Sampson and Quinshon Judd and some of these other guys, you can jumble them up in a variety of different ways. Whether it's condensed, whether it's spreading them out, all kinds of different stuff. They will use a significant amount of pre-snap movement so long as the offensive line can handle it. That's part of that never gets discussed enough and was obviously a huge problem in the last couple of years. But it's in that sense, it's going to be similar to what Kevin Stefanski wanted to do. But Todd Monken obviously has a different mindset in terms of how he wants to poke and prod and create matchups and do all these other things, because he's been very successful with a guy like Zay Flowers, moving him all different ways or moving other guys to create matchups that are going to benefit that player. So in that sense, he's a little bit like what Kyle Shanahan could do, which obviously is quite a ways back now at this point, where when he was with the Browns, he could find, two dozen different ways to get Josh Gordon open. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not nearly as reliant on one player in what he's building. He's got more of a group effort, but he's going to find different ways to manufacture that. And as far as the quarterback goes, everything's going to depend on who can see it and who can read it. I think most people are going to sit there and goes, well, he wants athleticism. Well, everybody wants athleticism at that position. And the problem is that I don't trust any of the contenders that are realistic for the starting job to have any. Obviously, you know, Deshaun Watson's movement capabilities are a major question mark given what he's experienced. But so it's going to be more about who can read the defense appropriately, who's got their eyes in the right place, who can get the ball out on time, and who can allow these guys to get the ball to the right guy so that they can run after the catch. That's the other commonality I see with the four main weapons I'm talking about. But largely everybody on the roster can offer something after the catch. So find ways to get them in space, take guys out of their way, and let them run with the ball. More spacing than we've had in previous years. Again, some of that is a big element of talent. But those are some of the main things, just in what we've seen in a couple of days, that is sort of going to evolve, that are going to be key points for this offense, particularly in the passing game and the quarterback position.
Lane, you've been pushing back against a little bit of the narrative that has on Twitter, at least, and I'm assuming on ATI as well, pushing back a little bit on the narrative of this guy's ahead, this guy's behind, you know, the odds favor this person, you know, according to Las Vegas. Can you talk a little bit about how you think this determination will actually be made you know, what some of the key characteristics you think Monken will be looking for in a quarterback?
Well, this entire quarterback situation is a confusing, rather comical at times situation. We're talking about a quarterback room that has two second-year quarterbacks that haven't really done anything besides get some snaps at this level. You have a veteran quarterback who had success early in his career and has been a physical train wreck for the last 3 or 4 years. And you have a ultra-athletic rookie that everybody's dying to see. Right now, everything is going through this process. It's all the mentals. It's translating what they're teaching them, how they want them to see a defense, how they want them to operate an offense, and getting it onto a practice field when they wear shirts and shorts. And while good to get out there and do those things, right now it's all the mental prep, all those mental reps that they're taking that's going to help build them to when it really starts to matter. There's undoubtedly that Monken has his ideas and what he's thinking. I am 100% positive that he is very open and keeping his eyes and ears really on the task at hand. And, you know, we talk about Deshaun Watson. He's a guy who should have been ahead of the other two during this kind of process. It's not even a question. It's not a big thing for media to be jumping up and down, you know, to get their clicks and get their notoriety. This is what was expected. This is what the thought was. Now you're going to get further along into that process, and you're going to get in the OTAs, and especially when they come to a conclusion, June 11th, somewhere in that area, your head coach is going to have a much stronger opinion or belief on who and how they're going to slot these guys 1 through 4. It's going to be interesting to see what the challenge is when they do, because they're going to throw more at them. And especially in that last OTA, you're going to see a little bit more put on them. But it comes down to is that for a Deshaun Watson, you don't know what you're going to get. You know, he may mentally have an idea where everything is, but physically, what can he do? Can he still move? Is he gun shy? You don't know until the live bullets start. So that's why all the narratives with this quarterback room and who's taking the first snaps and who's getting the second snaps, it really isn't going to matter much until the live bullets start when you get to training camp. Everything else is just that fodder for everybody to talk about and get excited about. You're not going to have a starting quarterback until you get into that mid part of August in the training camp, where you have a true definitive realization of what it is. Monken can sit there and throw Watson out there and say, okay, he's going to be the number one right now. It's not going to matter today. You get well into August, you get into mid August, then you'll start to see what you really have. Right now, it's just it's a crapshoot. You don't know who you're going to get, how it's going to work, and everything else is just a lot of noise.
I understand the appeal of naming a starting quarterback and this sort of sense that if I do that, if I name a starting quarterback, well, we can get our ducks in a row and really get going. And I've seen sort of this artificial deadline thrown out there by some in the media saying, well, they need to make a decision. I mean, some are saying now, but I've also seen this idea that they need to make a decision by the June minicamp. And I don't know how, unless it's just a blowout, which would be a huge indictment to whoever loses that battle. I don't know how you can possibly make that decision before training camp. I don't see how you're going to have enough information. But to Lane's point, you know, some of the same people who are saying that they need to make a decision by June were singing the praises of a certain quarterback who couldn't play dead on Sundays and saying how great he was in shorts and during the summer. Like, at some point, you have to learn from that mistake. And for Todd Monken, I'm going to go on out a limb here and say he's not stupid and put himself in a position where he's going to allow a situation to play out where he's going to have to change his mind and say, you know, I've named, you know, Deshaun Watson the starting quarterback, and then we get to August, and then we find out he can't play, and then we're going with Shador. I think he's going to be patient. I think he's going to let this thing play out. And I think the benefit for the Browns is, one, I think expectations are – most people are managing their expectations already in terms of what this team can achieve. But the other part is the offense is so young on so many pieces. There's no rush to get this thing going. You're going to have so many pieces trying to figure this thing out between, you know, we're so excited, understandably, about Harold Fannin and Quinshon Judkins and Dylan Sampson. These are second-year players. Denzel Boston and Casey Concepcion are rookies. Jerry Jeudy is like the old savvy veteran at this point. He's like 27. They just have a very, very young team on that side of the ball. The offensive line is its own journey. So I don't agree with the assessment that like that Todd Monken needs to have a decision anytime in the next month. And it most likely, I agree with Lane, this could be sometime in August before we get any real clarity on this thing.
You know, this whole quarterback thing wouldn't be the continuous story that it is if it wasn't for the new coach, the names involved that are in the room. You know, you got the people who just despise Watson, and I can understand it. You got the people who worship the second-year quarterback, and just on raw data alone, I think people should temper that. It's just a situation where now you get one of your quarterback's father injecting himself into the grand scheme of being talked to because he coached them. I don't give a rat's ass who coached them. Okay, that's not how this works. And this is a thing to just grasp and be in the spotlight. Deion Sanders is not going to make his son a better quarterback in Cleveland. Simple. Anybody who thinks that that's going to change really doesn't know how this works, especially with a head coach who obviously has his own idea and thoughts. He doesn't have no problem talking to people, but he's going to do his thing.
I think the element that Deion Sanders presents is entirely negative. It will not help him. And you can be as charitable as you want to Deion. This is what he does. And the problem is he makes it about Deion. And there's an inherent problem with this. Deion is trying to shield himself from blame. Shador Sanders was not ready to come out. Britt was not ready out of the box, despite the fact, you know, that he was in college for a long time and all this stuff. And no one wants to have the conversation of looking at Deion or looking at Shador and being, well, he's unprepared, because inevitably they go back. Who's the guy who's been coaching him his entire football life? Deion. He's not interested in taking that blame. And then he does the whole thing where this is the part where I will be charitable to Deion and say, I don't know if he's saying he's defending Shiloh's comments or saying that Shiloh essentially got what he deserved for saying what he said. Regardless, This is my plea the whole time for anyone. Let Shador do it. It's let him have his, let it be his success or his failure. Don't sort of force yourself into the conversation because this is the problem. And it makes Shador look weak. And Shador's not doing anything. Like this is why I hate this, is because Shador has not done anything to bring this on himself, but Deion cannot help himself. And Deion right now is in a position where he better worry about Colorado, because if things go the same way they did last year, he's not going to be the head coach of Colorado next year, and nobody's going to care. So this idea of, well, Deion says he should talk to me, like, this is stuff that would have been handled pre-draft process. The entire organization met with the Colorado folks at Pro Day. The coaching staff talked to former NFL head coach, quote unquote, Pat Shurmur, who was the offensive coordinator. Like, spare me. And then the part that makes it so problematic for me is that he talks about it in terms of motivation. You're a fifth round pick who thought he might deserve to be a first round pick. You got to start football games. You have a path to the starting job, and we are talking about motivation. There, the number of people who would crawl over broken glass to have that opportunity, don't tell me about motivation. I tell you, a fan base that does not want to hear about you lack of motivation or anything along those lines. And this is why I think Deion does not understand what he's doing, and he's going to make some elements of the fan base sick of his kid without actually doing anything, which is why I feel bad for Shador. And I felt bad for him the entire time. I think it's a disservice, and I hope he just stops. Just let him do it. He's 24 years old. Let him do it.
You know, I just look at the whole situation, and I want to – I don't have somebody that I want to win the job. I want to – the best – candidate, the best player to rise to the occasion, have that opportunity to rise to that level and take this job. And I think that's where a lot of the outside noise and everything else that comes into play when it comes to Shador, that's not his fault. And he is at least there, and he's working, and he's doing what he has to do because he wants this job. And understandably so, there is this fan base and all this noise that creates distraction and makes it more difficult.
The idea that he's not doing it as a dad is bullshit. And I'll tell you why. Who's he talking about? He's talking about Shador, and he's talking about Travis Hunter, who he has said the entire time he treats like a son. You know, he's not talking about LeJonte Webster. He's not saying to the Ravens, hey, so come talk to me about how to coach LeJonte Webster. He's only talking about the two people that matter the most to how he is perceived. They're also not talking about, hey, this is how we get to Shiloh. This is how we fix his NFL career. He's only talking about the two people that are directly tied to him. There are a lot more players that came out of Colorado than those two, but those are the only two he mentions, which is why he's not helping himself. And this is also why it is not helpful that he was his head coach the entire way, because you cannot untie these two elements. Spare me the former coach, because I will then tell you, show me what happens when James Franklin comes out and says, hey, Mike McCarthy, give me a call. I'll tell you how to work with Drew Allar. He will just be laughed out of the conversation because that's how stupid it sounds. Don't put yourself in this conversation. Those are conversations to be had if you're going to have them, behind closed doors. Do not put yourself in the public, because then you're making it about you. And then you put yourself in this weird predicament where you're talking about, you get into things where you're basically saying, I alone can fix it. And that is extremely troubling, and people don't want to hear that.
You know, and I'm sitting here, I'm looking at these little notes, and I see the comments, and we're talking about, well, he was here as, you know, he wants to talk to him as his coach, not his dad. Now, that don't wash. He's his father regardless, and he's made comments. You know, what you have to get to is that you're going to have a fan narrative. You're going to have a media narrative, and then you're going to have people who just want to stir this pot up. The bottom line is that the young man has the opportunity with a new head coach and a different offense to make noise and earn the starting position. Take it away from the perceived guy who everybody believes is a starter, which is Deshaun Watson, which he could walk over and trip over the chalk line and it'd be over. So, you know, let's keep everything realistic here.
By the way, I think my track record on Deshaun Watson is pretty clear. I'm rooting extremely hard for Shedeur Sanders to win the job. I just want him to do it. This is my whole thing. Let him do it. I do not want to be in a situation where and Shador's never going to say this. All he's ever going to say, to his credit, and potentially perhaps should behind closed doors, all he's going to say is, I love my dad. My dad's extremely supportive. Great. But he's in some ways, Deion is like taking away the hard work that Shedeur is doing on his own accord and making it about him. And that's why I cannot stand this. And there's a reason why people did not, and certainly I did not, don't subscribe to this. And I'm certainly not saying LeBron should get rid of him over this, but there was a concern that in drafting Shedeur, this is what you unloaded. You unloaded the nonsense. You unloaded these going back and forth with media people. Stay out of it. Just let Shedeur do his thing. And Shedeur is going to go out there and work and say all the right things. And he's been great in terms of his fan outreach and all that stuff. You know, he lent a local high school kid his car for prom and all that. Awesome. But here's the bottom line. Colt McCoy was a really nice guy. He couldn't play, and everybody wanted to get rid of him as a result. So ultimately, Shedeur has to go out there and be a good football player and win the job, or nobody's going to care, and nobody's going to worry about what Deion said. They're going to move on to the next thing.
What I'm trying to get to, you know, here tonight is, you know, we've got four players at quarterback, three of them very young, and we've got sort of a round hole, and I want to know which peg fits into that hole the best, right? And I guess, Pete, going back to you, if you're thinking about young quarterbacks, what are the things that young quarterbacks struggle with the most, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, complexities of the defense and what defenses are doing. It's just such a different world in terms of the way – I mean, college has certainly gotten more advanced, but they are not – they're playing some basic coverages overall. The NFL is a different ballgame. They're doing so many different things in terms of the trap coverages and the different looks and the pressures and everything else. They are doing everything impossible. And then you get into like obvious passing downs, and they design pass rushes to break all blocking rules. So at that point, the quarterback's head is spinning because he's trying to keep track of all these things at once. You get some disguise coverage in college, but it's not nearly as pronounced. NFL teams are just so much better at it. You know, a team in the NFL may come out in a cover three base every single play, and you're looking at the same thing going, this looks the same, this looks the same. Then the second the ball snap, it's a completely different defense. So being able to do that, that quick transition, being able to read that post-snap, figure out where you're supposed to be, where your eyes are supposed to be, doing everything right mechanically, all those things are really, really difficult. You know, most quarterbacks are going to be able to read man coverage and beat man coverage. It's pretty simple. It's the extra stuff. Robbers and disguises and different types of zones where, you know, you get a quarterback who throws a ball to place and just had no idea that guy was going to be there. That's where it's tricky, and it takes time. And that's why one of the weird sort of elements that you're seeing, and more now, but you every so often you see this, is one of these quarterbacks who's just hung around for 8 years and then suddenly has a pretty good season because he's just seen it all and he's figured it out enough. We're seeing Sam Darnold's a good example. He had not been around that long, but Sam Darnold sucked with the Jets. And, we'll put some of that on the Jets, but like just sticking with it, getting through it, figuring out how the game works, getting better at all these other elements, he's sort of figured out a place to be that has really allowed him to shine. It's difficult. That's what makes a guy like Drake May so incredible. Drake May came in at a really high level, and he's able to figure out where defenses are going. And certainly these coaches are trying to put these guys in the best position. But Drake May is a guy who came in, was great from the rip, second year, already in the MVP conversation. Obviously, the playoffs are going to dog him for a little bit. But like that, he was a genuine marvel in terms of his ability to process information and see what defenses were doing.
Lane, do you agree with that in terms of the key things that you're looking for, particularly in a young quarterback?
Sure. The speed of the game is different. You got to adapt to the speed of the game, and it's your recognition and it's your process. You need to process quickly at this level, recognize, and make the correct play. So, yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's really, when you just put it down in the words, it's a simplistic process of what is really a very trying area to try to play. But yeah, I would agree. That's really sums up what it gets comes down to get you on the field, to be at least an opportunistic player with a viable, being a viable option.
Well, Dylan Gabriel last year had a reputation as being the walking supercomputer or whatever he was called. And do you think that played into the fact that he got the first look last year, Pete, that it was just they figured that those challenges of NFL defenses, him playing for 5 years at, you know, in the Big Ten or whatever, that he was just more prepared for that? If that's still the case in 2026, why are we not hearing much about Dylan Gabriel?
It is why he got on the field. Fat, he was just better. I mean, straight up, he was better at that point in time. Again, if you just watch Shador throw the ball around, he's incredibly impressive. But when it came down to understanding what defenses were doing, I mean, he took – you watch 7-on-7 reps, and he's taking sacks because he didn't know where to go with the ball and just ate it. Dylan Gabriel was better at that. Now, ultimately – the speed of the game and the lack of blocking and some of the other elements, and the fact that Dylan Gabriel's tools were a little bit underwhelming at points. He didn't do a very good job of getting himself in position to take advantage of what was there when it was there. Those ultimately led to his to where he ended up. And then compounding that, he's tiny relative to other quarterbacks. He's not a big guy. He's not ultra athletic. He doesn't have, I think his arm is underrated, honestly, given his size. I think a lot of people think he has a crappy arm because he's small. He got a decent arm, but like in a game of sort of super freaks, I mean, just look at Taylen Green standing next to Dylan Gabriel, and you sit there and go, it's very easy why anyone would get enamored with anything else compared to Dylan Gabriel. But Dylan Gabriel, I'm certainly not going to write him off. He's going to have to go out there and show that he can do all that stuff. And maybe when we get to July and August, he can start doing some of those things and making sure he preemptively gets himself in position. The key here is that if somebody like Shador really got focused on getting better at reading defenses and doing all those things, I just in what little I've seen of him, I'm planning to be there Wednesday and I want to see it. It seems like he's done some work on his feet. His feet looked a little bit better to me. I'm curious to see if that sort of stands out to me again. If he got better at understanding what defenses you're doing, like his natural talent should push him right past Dylan Gabriel pretty easily, and there should be some separation created. But we've got to see it play out before that. So at this point, I know that, you know, even as I talk about it, I'm sitting there saying, well, it's sort of Shador versus Deshaun. I'm not willing to write off Dylan Gabriel at this point, but, you know, he's got to make a move pretty quick.
Lane, there's this overused term, phrase called hero ball. And it strikes me that the Cleveland Browns in 2025 almost needed someone who would play hero ball because the offensive line was so weak. You know, things didn't develop the way that they should. You need somebody who is mobile, someone who is, you know, willing to take some risks in order to make things work. Do you think that that dynamic changes in 2026 with the new offensive line, or at least will as we get toward midseason? It might change who you want at quarterback a little bit.
I think everything that they've done in the offseason leading up to the point that they are now is going to lead that direction. And we talk about 2025 and you needed somebody to step up and be that guy and make plays, and they just didn't have the talent or execution to make that happen on any kind of basis was a troubling aspect that they fought really hard to improve upon this offseason with the talent and the change at the head coach and what they're going to do offensively and everything. I believe that they've brought in talent that's going to be able to fit the bill to make plays, to be dynamic playmaker types. I think they've done enough of the offensive line to help stabilize that situation and improve as they go forward. I believe that your offensive head coordinator and head coach, where all that's going to come down to, is going to do fine in calling plays and working with the young talent. But the question is going to come down to, as it always has been with Cleveland, is the quarterback room. And you can have all the type of talent that you have on the field with explosive dynamics, but if you don't have a quarterback, if you don't have that guy, you're going to struggle. And that's where it's just imperative, and why such a focus has been put on what they're teaching these guys and then getting them out there on the field in these OTAs before we get to camp, because Monken wants to have his quarterback in place. Monken also knows that he doesn't have a quarterback yet. He doesn't know what he's got. He doesn't know where he's going to get to. And it's not saying that Deshaun Watson sucks or Shedeur Sanders is going to light it up. It could play out that way, and I hope one of those succeed in that way. One of these quarterbacks get to that point. But right now, you've added the dynamics surrounding your quarterback. You've added offensive line surrounding your quarterback, which is going to improve your total offensive philosophy, scheme, and production and efficiency. Now it comes down to what happens under center, and that's the big question, and that's what's going to continue to be the big question all summer.
Well, I think obviously the big question is going to be offensive line. If the offensive line is at least reasonable, with the amount of weapons they have, there's going to be guys open. Who can figure it out? Who can decipher that? Who can get the ball in the right place? This, you know, obviously injuries could happen. They could lose some of these guys over the process with these weapons. But based on what I've seen from Todd Monken or any coach worth a damn, with what they have, there's going to be guys. It's a matter of which quarterback can figure out where to get the ball, when to get the ball. And if they can do that, it may not be superstar level quarterback. In fact, I'm betting heavily against it. So is Vegas. But I think it will be informative, instructive, and at least allow these guys to sort of, you know, develop and be reasonable players. It may still, and most likely will, leave us wanting more, but at least there's something there. I mean, for all the things we could say about last year, the self-inflicted wounds that quarterbacks made, it was an awful spot to be in. And so it's at least a positive step in the right direction that, like, just give these guys, particularly the young guys, a fighting chance to prove themselves. And it seems like they're in that position. If Fano can do what he's supposed to do, if Zion Johnson can be what I think he will be in this scheme, those are going to be importance of this. The investment is on the left side. If that group can get going, then it should allow these guys to be a little bit more effective and open up the offense.
Let's, I know we spent a long time talking about quarterback, but we'll talk about some other things, but let's take a look at the schedule and just sort of see how it lines up for Todd Monken and the Browns. Two away games, and then they come home against the Panthers and they deal with the Steelers on a Thursday night. You take defenses that do things that rattle quarterbacks, disguising coverages, having a strong defensive line. Is there anything, Lane, that when you look at the schedule, you know, starting with Jags, Bucks, Panthers, Steelers, then the Jets, that makes you say, oh, no, I have to say – there's no way I can start a second-year quarterback. It has to be the veteran because these teams are just going to roll all over someone who can't recognize, you know, disguised coverage or, you know, complex defense.
A season ago, I wouldn't have started a rookie quarterback out of the gate just like they didn't. This year, all bets are off. Those guys have had a season under their belts. They're going to have another training camp under their belt, and they're going to get some – different coaching. This is where the Deshaun Watson thing has become such a story, because a lot of people feel that just because of what he knows, not what he can do, makes him an available and potential guy to start this season. Me, I look at the schedule, I see a loss in Jacksonville, I see a loss in Tampa, I see a loss in Carolina. You know, I see 0-3 to start this thing, and you might as well get your guys out there and get them playing, because the opportunities after that get better. Right. Get them on the field. Let them play. Who's ever the best candidate to do it. If it's a close competition, give it to the young guys. But get them out there in the field and let them grow and develop in this system, unless it's just a total train wreck and nobody can succeed, or it looks like 2025. I don't see any type of reasoning and basis to hold back with these guys if they have the ability to play. And they can play out on a level let's put it this way. Saisler or Dylan Gabriel are really competitive and close to whatever Deshaun Watson does. You have no reason to play the start Deshaun Watson.
Correct.
You just don't. Now, Deshaun Watson turns the clock back and he's Bill O'Brien's gunslinger from Houston. And he's just lighting this thing up and nobody's within the same freaking county. Then you got a different story and you got a different situation on your hand. And then you have to really think about it because this team doesn't, they expect to win. Okay, so they're going to go with gives them the best opportunity to win. I just don't see any reason to play the other guy if everything else is reasonably close.
It's interesting that you start them at 0-3. I don't look at any opponent at any point on the roster and say they're too good. I don't fear anybody. Now, the Browns could lose to all of them because they are just the range of outcomes is just that wild. But the reason I think it's interesting you mentioned the 0-3, I think they have 3 weeks to get their ducks in a row. Because they have to win at week four.
Yep.
The Browns, and I don't know what kind of weird quirk in the scheduling it is, this will be their eighth home game in a row on Thursday night. They are 7-0. They have to win, or there will be unpleasantness. I'm not saying they will fire people or anything else, but there's a lot of pressure. Likewise, obviously it's a new coach with Mike McCarthy. They are 1-6 in their last seven Thursday night games, and they've only hosted one of them. It is a massive advantage to host Thursday night football on a short week. You have to take advantage of that. And then if they are 0-3, maybe they squeak out, they beat the Panthers. Whatever. They get a week and a half to prepare for the Jets, who do not want to win. Now, granted, it's on their awful, awful field, and I just pray we survive. But if you can now win those two games, then you get the Ravens at home. The Browns, again, new coach for both teams and all that, but the Browns have been reasonably decent at home against the Ravens. Now things start to get interesting. The Titans on the road. It's not, again, these are the road games are tough. It's a rookie head coach, a lot of young players. Those are going to be tough, but nobody's going to sit here and go, the Titans are an unbeatable juggernaut. And then the Steelers on the road are coming back from France.
Absolutely.
So it's another weird quirk in the schedule, and the Browns have been horrible in Pittsburgh. Other than the playoff win, I don't know when the last time they won in Pittsburgh in a regular season. It might be Tim Couch. But it's a weird opportunity, and the Saints are not good. There's a lot of winnable football games now. The problem with the Browns is, and this is obviously going to depend on the quarterback and everything else, there are a lot of losable football games, and this is a trickier schedule than I think people want to admit because they see a lot of what look to be a lot of bad opponents or mediocre opponents, and I agree with that. But the way it's laid out, six of your first nine games on the road is absolutely brutal. And then you get this weird quirk where you've got a ton of home games on the road, and then you finish out the season on the road again. It's just weird. And so I think this schedule is tricky, and I think it has the potential to get fans very mad if it goes badly very quick, week four and five.
Yeah, but there's nothing in this schedule that makes you say this favors one quarterback over another. Like the two road games to start the schedule don't make you automatically jump to Deshaun Watson as, the go-to choice here. Pete?
I see no compelling reason to put Deshaun Watson on the field ever. But I agree with Lane's assessment. If it's close, I'm going with the younger guy. There's upside. Deshaun Watson is not going to be here in 2027, so I don't care. You are playing out the string at that point. Now, Todd Monken, can say, and obviously there's enough pressure with what ownership is saying that they need to win more games than they did last year, and the expectations are such that he may feel compelled to go with his guy, or not his guy, but the guy of Deshaun Watson, saying, well, the veterans is the safer choice. But again, if it's close, I would go with the young guy. And again, that's why I'm saying those 3 weeks, you got 3 weeks to get your ducks in a row and figure it out. Because if you can get through those, having, fighting your way through and getting the offense to a point where it's reasonable, all of a sudden you can fight your way back and be right at 500 or suddenly flirting with it right around the bye week. And at that point, anything's possible. So they've got to endure the initial things. On one hand, you sit there and go, man, two road games to start the season sucks. But if you're going to have a really tough atmosphere right out of the gate, it might as well be two road games to start with, because your team, especially the way the Browns are currently constructed, it's probably going to take them a while to get going. So get those out of the way, and then hopefully they're ready to go and ready to start winning games against the teams that are beatable.
See, I look at the schedule, and I look at how they start off with six of the first nine on the road, and I would think, I would put it in this perspective. I believe that you have a head coach and some staff that are more equipped mentally with players and communication and directness than we've had here. And they may go down there in Florida and just get their ass beat. But I don't expect that to be the case. I expect them to be competitive. I think this is a process which, if it was going to play out this way, to get them on the road and get them the experience and everything with these young guys and this staff, that's the way to go. You might as well get thrown into the fire. You're going to take your lumps, but you're going to learn a lot about your team in those first 2 and 3 weeks of the season. And I think that is going to benefit this team as the season progresses. There's going to be a lot to learn, a lot to absorb, and a lot to show. And it's going to give the opportunity for players to get on the field. And more so, it's going to give your head coach and coaching staff a better evaluation process on how this team competes and where they're going next. So to me, I don't have a problem them going on the road like this and take their lumps as that's going to be, because I think in the end of the game, this head coach and how he has this demeanor about him with these guys, at least to this point, they buy into that and they like his directness and his bluntness, and he's sort of comical with them too. It's going to help them as this goes along.
I'll be curious to see if they decide to stay down there for the week.
Right.
If they're going to try and get them sort of as acclimated as possible for that heat and not try to get, you know, obviously Miami's bullshit where they put you in the sun to sap you over the course of the game while their guys are in the shade isn't quite the same dynamic here. But I'll be curious to see if Todd Monken says, screw it, we'll figure out a place we can stay down here and work for the week between games.
All right, let's switch subjects here just a little bit. We talked about the quarterbacks for most of the show. Let's talk about the offensive line a little bit. Pete, you know, in our discussions over the last couple of weeks, you've talked a lot about the offensive line, how there is a plan behind that offensive line. They're focused on movement. They're focused on guys who are very flexible about what position that they play. I guess the question I have is, you know, everybody's going to look at this team and sort of say, oh, well, who's the quarterback? Or, you know, we now have, you know, four good receivers, hopefully. And, you know, that's their identity. Isn't a lot of what Monken wants this team to be sort of coalesce around the offensive line and the way he's building, he and Andrew Berry are building that offensive line, you know, sort of building the identity of the team from the inside out, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, look, it is incredibly how much different the two lines are going to be relative to what they want to do. Now, the current line isn't done yet. They've got some guys who are sort of stopgaps. But if they get to where they want to go, which is a world where it goes Spencer Fano, Zion Johnson, and Parker Brailsford, they're going to be extremely athletic. And what that can do in terms of putting pressure on the opponents, in terms of the stretch run game and some of the other stuff they want to do, the ability to use play action, some of the stuff that, you know, were staples with Stefanski's offense and that stretch PA boot stuff, are certainly going to be back. Pin and pull, wide zone, are going to give more space to these backs, which should be beneficial. The screen game should be better. I just don't think people appreciated just how limited the offensive line was last year and what that did to the offense. They were so constricted that the defense basically had to account for a couple gaps, and they could just sit there and load the box. And If you want to put seven guys in the box, go ahead. Because the left side of the line, like a guy like Spencer Fanduel, is so athletic that if he gets outside of you and he's able to seal that, there's going to be space out there. And that's going to put some doubt in the way these guys have to think. They may have to think, well, I've got to have somebody who can at least potentially get out there and cut that off, which may open up space in the middle or something along those lines. You're giving the defense more things to think about, more decisions to make. And the more times they have to do that, the more possibility there's for a mistake. And Todd Monken is just going to, the game I will point to is the Browns Ravens game last year. For three quarters, it was a pretty competitive football game. And just over the course of the game, Todd Monken and the Ravens offense just kept poking and poking and poking and finding things that they could work. And all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, they found him, and who's no longer on the team, but they found him. And then they scored 21 points in that fourth quarter. And it went from a pretty competitive football game, the Browns were down, to blowout route, no question, because that's what his offense is designed to do. And with the way the Browns have this defense, it really suits them well, that hopefully they're going to stay in the game long enough that they can figure out something and make that big play. And if with more talent, that should enable them to find the thing that Todd Monken can do. And that one weakness, that one missed play, that one mistake, if the Browns are good enough to punish them for it, that could be the difference in the football game. And they may be a team that has to win games like 23-20. And they may be a team that is sort of winning or losing in the wire on sort of those coin flip games as a result of this until they figure this thing out. But that's where I think the sort of the journey with Todd Monken and this offense is going to be really interesting. I think the defense is, even if you're somebody who thinks the defense is going to regress a little bit, I think the fact that the offense will be at least better enough, it should sort of make up the difference. And God forbid they actually play with a lead and they really get to unleash the defense like they did against like Miami last year. But regardless, it's just going to allow Monken to hang in there and figure things out and try to figure out what's going to work and how to mess with defenses and find the right matchup to win.
Lane, your thoughts on this, argument that I'm making is that you're really going to see a difference, you know, in philosophy with what they're doing on the offensive line and ultimately, you know, their ability to move people around, the athleticism and all that they seem to be going through on the offensive line is going to sort of define what this team is, you know, as much as anything else that they're doing right now. And it also helps to define what sort of quarterback you want behind that line, you know, whether he's going to be able to manage an offense with all those moving parts and things along those lines. Do you think that plays into your decision about, how you deploy yourself at quarterback at all?
I would look at it this way. If all things being equal, you take your competition at quarterback, who are going to play behind these offensive linemen throughout the summer. And I still say that you take the guy who gives you the best opportunity. And if it's relatively close, then you go to the young guy. The imperative thing to think about here is that what they've done along the offensive line, they've added younger talent, more athletic talent, talent that can pull, talent that can trap, talent that can get to the next level. They've added talent that can do these things that they struggled mightily with a season ago. To the naked eye, just on raw data, you can look and see that Afano is going to help you at left tackle compared to where you were a season ago. At left guard, they haven't made the ultimate decision yet, but, you know, it would make sense that Johnson would be the guy who's playing left guard just due to the athleticism. And he's really a really physically strong guy who can move. At center, is Whipler going to make this thing out, or is the rookie Brailsford going to be it? And I think Brailsford has given them everything they want to, and they just love this kid. So I could see that. And then that gives you the opportunity at right guard to have Jenkins over there at right guard, which helps solidify that area. And then, of course, your pickup from Houston is going to be your right tackle. But the thing that makes all this thing fit together is that then you go into the draft and you select a tackle that they really like. I was surprised in sitting here and talking about this guy, how much they really liked him. So the offensive line is such a critical component that has failed this team over and over. And while, yes, it's a makeover and it takes time because it, the offensive line position is one of the most difficult areas for a complete unit to work as one. But being said, I know that they've been putting in extra time. I know that your offensive line coach is a guy who's a really excellent teacher. And these guys are buying in. And that's what's going to make it interesting to see how quick this can evolve and develop. But getting back to your point with the quarterback, if everything is close, it doesn't make a lot of sense to go in up one direction with, say, a veteran like Watson, unless you're trying to prove something as an organization, or you're trying to get something out of your monumental investment, or you're trying to find a way to pawn them off, and you can't because then you got to eat all that. So it doesn't make a lot of sense unless this guy is just stand up, head and shoulders above everybody. It makes no sense for this guy to be your starting quarterback. That's why I'm so interested to see what happens with this offensive line and these quarterbacks and see what they've improved upon, especially when you look at Shadur, you know, with his feet. Is he getting around and coming through his hips? You know, those type of things, even before I get to the recognition part and him getting the ball out of his hands. Also, how much of a comfort level is going to improve due to the offensive line? If they show that immediate improvement that gives these guys confidence, because Deshaun Watson hasn't taken a meaningful step since 1972, and Shadur was under the fire and duress of a season ago, just like Dylan Gabriel was. So it's a completely different atmosphere and environment, and it's interesting because your coaches that are here now working with these guys, they communicate in a different way, and it's... these guys like this so far. So let's see if how this grows and develops as the summer goes along, because that's going to be the critical component in making this whole thing work, how that offensive line works.
All right, let's take a couple of quick questions here for the gang. I know you both will have opinions on this first question. I'll go with you first, Pete. Chat username wanting to know, can you touch on the coaching staff in your observations, just in general, Pete, how would you term this coaching staff? What's the big difference between this coaching staff and the Stefanski staff of last year in terms of, you know, how they deal with the players in practice and their philosophy?
It's too early to tell on this stuff because they've had basically, what, three practices. You know, some of the stuff we're going to have to feel out and see what it is. And the other part of the matter is defensively, it's all the same guys, save for the coordinator. So, you know, the one thing I would say is that I wasn't there for much of Kevin Stefanski practice. I just think Todd Monken runs an efficient practice. He's got guys working. They're always doing something, which I appreciate. There's not a lot of wasted time or movement. They're constantly getting something out of them. But I think what we're really going to, I mean, they demand effort and all that stuff. Great. This is, you know, everybody's having fun. It's May. Let me know. We'll see what happens when the pads come on. It's not fun anymore because it's 88 degrees and, you know, guys are getting chippy and this guy went harder than I thought he should and all this other stuff. And coaches, you yell at me, this, that, and the other. I think we've got to wait and see what this thing ultimately going to look like, you know, by training camp to really get a sense of what this is going to be. Right now, everybody's loving life and having fun because there's really no depth chart, even though they've got guys working in an order. So nobody's sitting there going pressing for, other than the tryout guys who are trying to earn a job. Nobody's really pressing at this point. They're just learning, trying to get better, and everybody's having a great time for now. That will change.
Right. Lane, you and I have been doing this craziness for 25 years now or so, quarter of a century. And we've gone through, what, 50 different coaching staffs in that time, something along those lines?
Yeah, it's fairly amazing.
Does Monken remind you of anybody that we've had here in the past here in Cleveland? Is there a analogous head coach that we've seen before here in Cleveland in terms of the approach that he brings, you know, his attitude, you know, his outspokenness, that sort of thing? I'm having trouble thinking of one.
There's a coordinator.
Well, I would say that his bluntness and openness and honesty can rival a former intern coach for the Browns that took took over after that disaster of Hugh Jackson. As far as just his overall demeanor, I don't think we know enough yet. I don't think we've got to see it play out live yet to get a better idea of what this thing's going to be. It's the same way with the players. I mean, it's easy for players in April and May to be, you know, sort of excited and getting into it and buying into it. You know, let's see what happens with this, what this feels like in the third week of August when they're beat down and really tired of Todd Monken's ass. So
it's coming. It's going to happen.
You know, and then we're going to, you know, we'll have to sit through all the stories coming out that, let's not even get there. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see what the coaching staff does. I know the players appreciate the communication and the openness and the directness so far. And there's a number of them that have said that exactly the same way I just said that to you, that it's something that they're unaccustomed to. Yeah. Let's see if they feel the same way when the blunt honestly starts hitting in the summer, when, you know, the kid gloves are completely off. It's going to be interesting to see, but so far so good.
Just from a broad strokes angle, the way we are with offensive head coaches now, everybody's, they're all like Kevin Stefanski. Everybody's like that, more reserved, more quiet, the thinking man's coach. Todd Monken is, he talks like a defensive head coach who coaches offense. And the guy who jumps out from that standpoint is Bruce Arians. Those are guys who you listen to them talk. It's, you know, they don't have time to, in their mind, they don't have time to waste on, you know, dancing around stuff. They're going to get to the point. They're going to say what they think. It might brush people the wrong way. It ultimately will at some point. That is who sort of jumps out to me from that standpoint. And it's, as I said, you know, it's refreshing right now, but there will come a point and just naturally where guys don't think it's as great when they're being told that it's not good enough or, you know, this, that, and the other. But just in broad, like if you were just the most comparable figure to me is Bruce Arians in terms of they sound, in terms of how they talk to the media, in terms of how they sound like defensive coaches, but they coach offense.
And let's not forget that Bruce Arians got run out of this town as well because, he was the offensive coordinator and the offense wasn't very good. I don't know if you can pin that on him.
The endless amount of wide receiver screens, I will pin on him. They never stop.
Probably the only thing that he had felt comfortable with.
Yeah, true. One last question before we go. Spaghetti 2 says, how concerned are you guys about the lack of quarterback depth? Let's start with you, Lane. How concerned are you?
I'm a firm believer that if you never have enough quality corners at this level.
Yeah.
Of course you have to have some kind of concerns and reservations, and I don't have much of a doubt that they'll add somebody along this thing in the mix. But they've got some younger guys that have shown some ability. They're going to play more. You're going to see more three safety. It's a big safety. I think what you're going to come to find out is that they've got a couple picks, or I should say signings, that are going to fall into play here. I don't see it as a dire situation, though I do anticipate they'll add somebody or try to add somebody that's had reasonable success at this level. Let's see how that plays out because it hasn't come to fruition yet, but I know there's discussions.
The only spot on defense where I feel good about their depth right now is safety. I think they'll be just fine at safety because I think they have every intention of having five guys. Because they want to use three a lot, and in order to do that, it's no different than all these teams who want to use, you know, five tight ends. You have to have that many on game day to be able to do it. So the Browns are going to have that many safeties. They draft Emmanuel McNeil Warren. They've still got Hickman. They've still got Delpit, who I hope will get extended soon. And then I think they're excited about guys like Donovan McMillan and Christopher Edmonds in seeing what those guys can do. Because if those guys are pretty good, and you've got five real safeties, that position group is really strong. I think every other spot on defense, which is strange that offense is sort of in, defense obviously has more top end talent, but in terms of depth, I think the offense has more options, whereas the defense, corner, linebackers,
edge,
not a concern for me. I could care less about adding more linebackers, but I know the Browns want more are looking at it. But yes, edge, defensive tackle is an interesting sort of, you know, opportunity for them. I think they're largely okay with it. And Malik Collins, who you know, got engaged. I'm sure I wasn't the only one looking at seeing how his leg was as he in the picture kneeling down, looked pretty healthy. So hopefully that's a good indication.
He's actually ahead of schedule, just to let everybody know that before your local media in the next 3 weeks tells you how ahead of schedule he is.
So, you know, every spot on defense is an opportunity, other than safety. To me, they could add more help.
All right. Fair enough. Well, we have hit 8:15. We've been on the air for an hour, and we appreciate all the comments and questions in the chat room. Very entertaining read as the show went on. Please remember to like and to subscribe to this broadcast, to the OBR. Tomorrow night, Pete and Joe Mazzullo will be here talking for a couple of hours on Pete and Joe, and then we'll have Inside the Browns Beat on Wednesday night. So thank you very much for watching. We will see you again next week on Gang of Three. Good night, everybody.